Steganotosaurus. Biggest carnivore the world has ever seen.
Alright, there's the clap.
There's the clap.
Then you won't get my embarrassing bump of the microphone.
Will, we both bump the mics every time we do this. We're a punk rock organization.
We need a proper producer is what we need.
God is my producer. And speaking of playing God, hello everyone. Welcome back once again to Podcast Part 3, the Part 3 Podcast, your one and only premier source for all things about movies that came after two other movies. Once again, I am Sam.
And I am Will.
And we are talking about 2022's sixth Jurassic movie, the third in the Jurassic World trilogy, Jurassic World Attack of the Clones. Or Jurassic World Dominion, I suppose, is what it's called.
So many clones.
So many, too many clones. Well,
oops,
actually, no.
All clones. Actually, only really one clone.
The big clone from Fallen Kingdom is actually not a clone. She was the
that's
product
right,
of some asexual impregnation. There's a lot.
This movie is
justice for Charlotte Lockwood. Finally getting her due.
This movie is so all over the place.
Well, all right.
It's
so
amazing.
We talked last week about Jurassic Park 3 from 2001, and if that's an example of a movie that maybe doesn't have enough ideas, Jurassic World Dominion is an example of a movie with too many ideas. There's too much going on in this movie, and it's got too many things it's trying to service. And, you know, it's going to lead to the hard question you have to ask with this franchise of A, what do people want from Jurassic Park / World, and what can you do with the franchise to keep it going where it's more than just dinosaurs harassing humans?
Right, more than just the dinosaur set piece delivery system, as we sort of described it last week. I mean, the thing is, I think Colin Trevorrow, when he came in back to direct this one off of falling out of favor with Lucasfilm and not doing what would eventually be Rise of Skywalker.
The lesson of Colin Trevorrow is that if you do one really well-received indie movie, you get a Star Wars or Marvel movie. But if you do another really poorly received indie movie, you lose a Star Wars movie.
Exactly.
I don't know. I've never seen, or I actually know nothing about The Book of Henry, but that movie was so bad that they took a Star Wars away from him.
Amazingly. Yeah, but it seems like he's got, like, legacy sequels on the brain when he's making this movie. This movie seems to be, like, about what a legacy sequel is and what it can be and what it should be. Almost like, it's almost a parody of legacy sequels at a certain point.
This is the thing, and this is the thing I was wondering as I was watching this movie. And we'll sort of go back to the beginning of this new trilogy and work our way forward a little bit, but unlike Star Wars or Star Trek or Marvel or any franchise with a huge fan base, or even something like Ghostbusters, which has a really, really vocal, passionate fan base, do you feel like Jurassic Park has, like, fans the way other franchises do? There's tons of people that love it. These movies are insanely popular. Every single one of the new ones made a ton of money. But does it have? I feel like I don't know any, like, purists or people that get really angry about decisions that get made in these movies.
Well, see, that's the thing. I didn't think that until I started seeing people dressing as characters from the first Jurassic Park and like at like Halloween and stuff. And it was always sort of like, oh, okay. I mean, I guess they're easy costumes.
Yeah,
to
it's not just a really cost-effective costume. You really just need a hat and a chambre shirt, and you're good
right,
to go.
You're good to go. But it always sort of struck me as like, the characters in Jurassic Park are fine, they're fun, but I wouldn't, like, with Ghostbusters and with Star Wars and Star Trek, the characters drive so much of those stories that it's, like, it's understandable why the franchises have stayed around as long as they have. But here, it's like, it's kind of the dinosaurs and the spectacle that's kind of the stars of the show.
Yeah,
right?
that might be it. I think you might have hit on something there. The fan base of Jurassic Park is indistinguishable from the fan base of just people who love dinosaurs.
Right.
I think it's kind of like Jaws. It's like, I love Jaws, but the star of Jaws is a big shark.
Right.
You know,
exactly. I mean, and Jaws has great characters too, but it's not kind of where you, I don't know, when you think of Jaws, that's not kind of what you think of.
There's every single one of these movies has at least one returning character from a prior film.
Right. Yeah. You know. Well, except for Jurassic World, the first Jurassic World, anyway.
No. Hey, Henry Wu, sir.
Oh, no, wait, that's right.
Turns out that one guy that was still in the lab that day was incredibly important.
Oh my gosh.
That is such an interesting decision they made. So go back. Jurassic Park 3 happens in 2001. It's not a bomb, but it's not like hugely. It does about as well as you would expect if you've seen Jurassic Park 3. It's like, it's fine. Yeah. You know, but it was from 2001 until 2015, there was always some sort of simmering development going on with Jurassic Park. It was always going to come back. Like, it was right. A given. Someday they were going to do something with the Jurassic Park franchise. And then in 2015, they did Jurassic World, which is, I'd say, it's the right up there with Force Awakens, with your quintessential nostalgia era reboots, requel, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, God, it's so funny. I forgot that it came out the same year as The Force Awakens.
That's, yeah, and made bank. That movie made so much money.
A ton of money.
I don't know, and that's the crazy thing, is I don't know anyone that loves that movie. I know plenty of people that like it. It's fine, right. It's fun, but I don't know anyone that's like, oh yeah, Jurassic World, like that's my shit, you know? Maybe I'm old. Maybe it's the younger generation.
Well, when I saw Fallen Kingdom in the theater, a bunch of kids, like when Blue first appeared, they were like, Blue! So oh, it was Lord. Like, it must have been some sort of lightning rod for that generation.
Well, it was also like, this 2015, it was a year after Guardians of the Galaxy. Chris Pratt could not have been bigger as a name. It's got all the dinosaur goodness of the original. It's the one idea they hadn't gotten to yet, which is what if you actually opened the park? Which I think is a really fun concept. I think it's a fun way to go. I think the movie, it's such a modern blockbuster, and that it's like, we've created a new dinosaur who's even meaner than the old dinosaurs, and the old dinosaurs that you love from the original movie have to kill it in the end. And yes, that T-Rex is the same T-Rex from the end of Jurassic Park. You can tell because she's got scars on her neck. We want to make sure this is clear, and we want to make sure you know that Brachiosaurus that dies horribly in a fire on a dock is the one from the beginning of Jurassic Park. Just so you know that we've seen the originals and we're thinking of you, fans.
Yeah, so many weird, like, little Easter eggs and callbacks for this franchise, too.
Well, it's kind of all you have besides the original actors. And as we'll see in Dominion, the original actors, like, the justification for getting at least one, maybe two of them into the movie at all is kind of hilarious to me. So Jurassic World's a big hit. It's, to its credit, it doesn't bring back, besides B.D. Wong as Dr. Henry Wu, who might as well be a new character.
Right.
It's like, no, he's an Easter egg being in it, but he's like, he has any development he has as a character in the new movies.
Yeah.
It's all new cast, all new characters. It's, you know, it doesn't change the status quo a ton, and it kind of leaves them with like, okay, we can kind of do whatever we want for the next movie. Yeah. And that's led to Fallen Kingdom in 2018, which is like tonally, it's got like, it's what I call them. For podcast part two, the part two podcast, we're going to talk someday about what I call Super Mario Brothers 2 part twos, where they are just so out of step with the rest of the trilogy, and not necessarily in a bad way. I imagine if Jurassic Park had as big and angry a fan base as Star Wars, Fallen Kingdom would be The Last Jedi.
Right, yeah, everyone would be like, this is the one that's desecrating the legacy.
No, this is the best one because it shits all over the other ones.
It's a deconstruction.
It's a deconstruction. It's totally different. It's like, it is, to its credit, at least for the second half, it is trying to be something different.
Yeah.
I don't think it necessarily all works as a movie, but it's J.A. Bayona, who was a horror director, or he done The Orphanage, and he done the movie The Impossible, the tsunami movie. And it's just, it's very, the whole vibe of it's different. The character, even the characters coming back from World feel like different characters all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's like almost aggressively melancholy and aggressively sad.
Oh, these last two are so sad.
So sad.
There's no wonder. Everyone's just, it's just, there's so much just animal abuse going on.
Yeah, and like, I mean, I do like that sequence that's basically a speedrun of Jurassic Park, but everything's on fire. It's kind of fun, but like...
So, in the first movie, Bryce Dallas Howard's character, she is like kind of in charge of running the park, and she oversees the like sort of new attractions, which are these genetically modified, you know, doom villains of dinosaurs, basically. And she has an on-again, off-again fling with Navy veteran Owen Grady, who's an animal trainer who trains the raptors, and he's got a real bond with them, and he doesn't care. He wears cargo shorts, and he's so cool. Oh, my God. All right, you know, it's
is
like...
Is he so cool? He is so cool. So cool.
Can you imagine Star-Lord, but the movie... genuinely thought he was as cool as he did. but it's still Chris Pratt.
But the trick with Star-Lord is that, of course, that he is cool. He just, like, he's just such a buffoon.
Yes, but so is Owen Grady.
His own way.
So is Owen Grady. And they still, the movie never, like, the last line of Jurassic World is him laying down a corny line. He's like, I think we should stay together, you know, for survival. And... Gamora would have rolled her eyes, but for whatever reason, Bryce Dallas Howard's character, Claire.
Yes,
I watched
Claire.
Three of these movies. Claire. And I love Bryce Dallas Howard. I will always, like any good millennial, I will always have a simmering low-key crush on Bryce Dallas Howard.
How could you not?
I mean, I wouldn't kick her out of my pool for being a water nymph or whatever it was.
She was the savior of the universe. No, wait, no, it was the writer who was the savior of the universe.
M. Night Shyamalan was the savior, even if he had to deal with the cranky movie critic that lived a couple units down. kids, check out Lady in the Water.
We'll get to him when we talk about Glass.
Oh, right, he does have a threequel.
He does have a part three, yeah.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm sure that someone hoped that would have been a third Last Airbender, but they never quite got that far.
They never got to two.
But yes, no, I've never seen Glass. We will talk about Glass, because it's Unbreakable is a great movie. That's,
I have thoughts about Glass.
Oh, do
Glass.
You?
Know.
All right, well, we'll
thoughts,
get there.
But we'll get there, but anyway.
So they are like... They seem like they're going to get together at the end, and then we jump to Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, and now Claire is, much like John Hammond in the Lost World, atoning for her sins and has become sort of a dinosaur conservationist. And right. She's got a kooky, quirky little team of people that she does to save the dinosaurs from Isla Nublar, because it's about to go off as a volcano. And she's got to get Chris Pratt back, because they got to get Blue, the last surviving raptor, off the island, to which I'm just like... Let this raptor die. I'm just in the camp of let these animals die. These poor abominations of science. Just let them go.
Yeah, why are it's sort of like, why are we saving them again? Like, they really shouldn't be in this time.
They
period.
Don't want to be here. We don't want them to be here. The theme park was not going to, even if the theme park was still going, there's a volcano that's about to go off. So you're done. It's over. Let it go. But no, they team up with, there's so much backstory they got to fill in here. Turns out all this time, John Hammond, our old buddy John Hammond, Sir Richard Attenborough, had a silent partner in all of this, played by James Cromwell, Sir Benjamin Lockwood. And he and John had a falling out at some point, but he still cares about saving the dinosaurs. And his assistant, who could not be more oily and is clearly trustworthy, even though he's really oily, wants to bring them back to put them in a nature preserve, when really he wants to auction them off to the highest bidder to fund more genetic research. So he dupes Owen and Claire and Claire's assistants, the mean vet lady and the nerdy guy. There's this whole sequence on Isla Nublar, the volcano sequence, all these dinosaurs dying and panicking in horror, which is kind of just not fun to watch. And then it becomes like a haunted house movie where the ghost also happens to be a genetic super raptor trying to kill everybody. And that honestly, it's kind of fun. I think that the second half of that movie is a lot of fun in a different way than we've seen from a Jurassic movie up to that point.
Yeah, it's sort of like what you'd expect, like, a Jurassic Park TV show would do for a bottle episode, you know?
It's someone was like, what if we did more stuff in this franchise that felt like the kitchen scene in the original?
Right.
Like, that sort of thing.
And I think my problem with both these two movies, Jurassic World feels like such a, we're just going to redo Jurassic Park, but sort of bigger.
Yeah.
These two movies, they have like just too many ideas and too many things that they want to cram into them. They almost feel like TV, like five episodes of a TV show cut together to be a movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Dominion especially. Fallen
Kingdom kind of is a little more cohesive, but...
Fallen Kingdom is one movie that becomes another movie halfway through.
Right.
Dominion is three movies all jockeying for space, and they collide in the third act. But also, as we know, because there's two cuts of Dominion out there, it's like... Right. There's so much that they took out of this movie, especially at the beginning. So Fallen Kingdom ends with the dinosaurs get out, and now they're coexisting with humans, for better or worse. And it's not an easy coexistence. And there's this incredible opening sequence that was cut from the theatrical version of Dominion, where it's just a T-Rex rampaging through a drive-in movie theater. It's such a great opening to the movie.
It is, and it sort of sets up kind of everything you want it to about humans and dinosaurs coexisting, and sort of a comment on how this is kind of an elevated B movie, and like all it's a fun, really fun sequence. And
to take it even further, there's a sequence that's online that was cut out, I think, from both versions that leads into that, that's set in dinosaur times, and it's
right.
Just like,
no, that I mean, that was in the cut I saw anyway.
That stuff's
with
incredible.
The mosquito flying around, yeah.
Like I watched the theatrical cut, which starts with like just like a now this narration catching you up on everything.
The version I saw, it starts with this mosquito sequence, mm-hmm. sort of in your Jurassic times or whenever, and then it cuts to the T-Rex rampaging, and then into the now this exposition dump.
And that stuff all sets up plot points for later in the movie, because the prehistoric sequence sets up the rivalry between the T-Rex and
the Gigantosaurus. The largest carnivore that ever lived.
The largest carnivore that ever walked largest carnivore on land.
Right.
He's the largest carnivore on land, and the movie's going to remind you of this many times.
Anytime it's ever brought up, it's going to say the largest carnivore that ever lived on land.
The carnivore that is bigger than the Mosasaurus? No, on land, stupid. Yeah.
But they even don't it, like, isn't it, doesn't Owen and Grant, don't they say it at the same time, too?
They definitely say it at separate times, and then they say it together. I feel like there was, it never even made it in, there's definitely a version, a draft of this where there was like an Owen Grady, Alan Grant rivalry.
Right.
Or something.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the real villain of this movie, which is evil corn eating bugs.
Yes. Giant super locusts are the antagonists.
They're destroying the world's crops, except for the crops engineered by a company called Biosyn.
Which is owned by the guy who's...
Dodgson. We've got Dodgson here.
From who's like...
And nobody cares. Still nobody cares.
Nobody cares. He's one of the minorest of minor characters that has a speaking role in Jurassic Park.
All right. To be fair, Dodgson's a pretty big character in the two original Michael Crichton books. He's the main villain of the original Lost World. He has the role in the Lost World that... I think John Hammond's nephew has in the movie, where he's okay. I'm from a rival company. I'm going to go and take dinosaurs off this island, and I'm going to get eaten by a baby T-Rex at the end. That he had that part.
Okay.
And I think he plays a fairly big role as a villain in the animated shows that happen kind of concurrently the movies. Like I haven't watched Camp Cretaceous or Chaos Theory, but in Chaos Theory happens like concurrently to Dominion. Like Deacon Lackman's dinosaur smuggler character, she's like the main villain on the show.
Got it. Yeah. All right. All right. It's so that Jason just makes Momoa this movie make a little bit more sense.
It's Jason Momoa in Fast X. All these characters are just off screen, you know? No, it's so that's you've got on one hand, you've got the, all right, I got to go back to Fallen Kingdom to set something up. Cause she's an important character. Maisie is what we think is Benjamin Lockwood's granddaughter. But in that we find out that his daughter was killed in a car accident and he cloned her to raise as his granddaughter. We're going to find at the end of Fallen Kingdom, she goes off with Owen and Claire because she's a human clone, and that's a big deal. Like the scientists are going to want to get a piece of that. And she's living in hiding in the woods. It's her and Owen and Claire, and Blue shows up now and then when he can't find any like backpackers to kill.
Something.
Yeah. But she gets caught by Biosyn and taken to their retreat in the Dolomite Mountains, which you can't hear. I can't hear Dolomite and not go, put your weight on it. But that aside, and so they're pursuing her there, and that leads them on a merry chase through Malta with dinosaur smugglers, and they meet a quirky pilot. And as I'm saying this, I'm realizing this is the plot of The Mummy Returns.
It is the plot of Mummy Returns, yes. It did have a Steven Soderbergh vibe in the middle of it.
Summers.
Like, yeah, Steven Summers.
I wish.
No, not my Stevens.
Oh, man, like Traffic with dinosaurs.
That'd be awesome.
Or even Ocean's 11 with dinosaurs. Yeah.
Hey, yeah. I mean, that's what the franchise should be doing. Just go hog wild with this stuff.
But I mean, anyway. The problem is for a bunch of for movies that have fun characters, and there's like this movie has like DeWanda Wise's character, the pilot character, feels like she's in a more fun movie.
Yeah,
but she's stuck with like the grimmest versions of Owen and Claire, and they like you want if they're the main couple and they're going off on adventures to save their adopted daughter and to save the dinosaurs, you want them to have more banter and more fun and more chemistry. Something that both these actors are capable of. I just don't think they vibe off each other that way, and they weren't written that way in the sequels.
Yeah, I mean, it does. It seems like, at least in Jurassic World, they're sort of written as sort of like this bantery couple.
Well, he wears cargo shorts and he's all laid back, and she's all buttoned up and prim and all business. Type. Yeah, you know.
And they try, but it does. It feels like neither of these two actors, who are very charismatic, have any on-screen charisma with each other.
No, but that's the thing. Being good actors and being, you know, attractive and all that doesn't guarantee charisma. Some dumb movies have thrived on the charisma of their leads, both, you know, romantic leads and buddies. But like you think of like Speed and versus Speed 2.
Right.
Speed, like, that movie crackles because of the chemistry between Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock. You put her opposite another guy who, Jason Patrick, who is a fine actor, but is clearly a replacement for Keanu Reeves. They don't have the same chemistry. You look at a better example, Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz in the Mummy movies. Like they're so good in those movies, and you want that energy. You need every movie needs a Nick and Nora Charles if they're going to have a couple front and center.
No, I think you're right. And they don't have that. And, you know, it's funny because Chris Pratt and Zoe Saldana in the Guardians movies have that. They have that sort of, like, prickly crackle energy that works, you know.
Well, I think it's just that this movie is so deathly serious, and it should have a sense of, if not fun, at least adventure. Like, and it's, and then, so they're on the hunt to get their quote-unquote daughter back, and Blue's kid Blue has a baby raptor, and the baby raptor's also been taken, so it's a double taken. And but meanwhile, Biosyn has engineered evil grasshoppers that'll eat all the crops except the crops they manufacture, and that's got former paleobotanist Ellie Sattler on the case, which brings Laura Dern back to the franchise. And she figures out it's Biosyn, and she happens to know someone who works for Biosyn doing something, and that's Ian Malcolm. And so she recruits, for reasons that I've actually never been able to quite pin down after watching this movie, she recruits Alan Grant to come with her.
Yeah, it's like, what is Grant's, how does Grant help with this? Like, how would he,
I have, my theory is this. She couldn't get anyone else. She knows he has, like, a crush on her, and she figures he'll say yes.
And has nothing better to do.
I will say this. For those three characters, I do like how they're all reintroduced in this movie.
Yes.
Because Ellie Sattler has pivoted away from dinosaurs, and she's just doing something involving botany and agriculture, and she's being proactive and smart, and that tracks with what she would do. And Ian Malcolm is doing some sort of cushy Silicon Valley type job where he doesn't appear to actually have to do anything, but he's probably
He
gives talks to people and makes a ton of money. And Alan Grant just went right back to digging in the dirt. And I feel like that's very natural for all three of those characters. But then they have to justify them being in the movie.
Right. And it's one of the strangest decisions this movie makes, is splitting up the main plot into basically an A and B plot that don't really have anything to do with each other outside of the evil corporation.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like the locusts don't have anything to do with dinosaurs aside from the evil corporation that's making dinosaurs, right? Like
I guess Maisie is the thing that all of this hinges on, because she encounters Alan and Ellie.
Right.
And they Dodgson's assistant helps them escape.
But that's like in the last 45 minutes of the movie. It's like a 2 hour and 45 minute long movie.
I feel like the entire middle act is just Ellie and Alan flailing around on the floor of that clean room. It feels like that goes on for a really long time.
It goes on forever. It's endless. And it's like, it just feels like nothing happens in the middle of that movie. It's like, oh, here's this exciting dinosaur chase with like some... the leads who are just so deathly serious that they don't.
It's such a video game setting too, where they go. They go to this like dinosaur preserve in the Dolomite Mountains, and it's like, we have an aerial deterrent system that keeps flying dinosaurs from attacking, and you can escape on the Hyperloop, but you'll end up in the Amber Mines. Look out for the Dimetrodons in the Amber Mines. There's also a place where you can pick up an extra life and armor. You know, it's like, we've released, you know, oh no, the forest fire has started. You have to evade all the flaming dinosaurs or whatever.
No, it is. It is. It is a video game level, or, you know, the video game, an overworld or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
You can enter into the different hubs of what you need to do.
Yeah. It's also like, we have to give action movie moments to characters that have no reason to have action movie moments. Like, because he waved a flare at a T-Rex in Jurassic Park, now Ian Malcolm gets to, like, fucking throw a flaming javelin into Gigantosaurus's mouth. Like,
yeah,
suddenly in the third act, you have a bunch of stuff you need to resolve, and eight fucking characters you have to service, not including the villain and Dr. Wu, who's there. It's
right.
Like, you have the three original characters, you have the pilot, you have Maisie, you have Owen, you have Claire, and you have the baby raptor.
The baby raptor and all this stuff. And so, and then you have to have like one set piece on top of another. And it all started feeling so mind numbing to me by the end.
Like, it's like, they feel like, oh, because we've done it like fans expect two dinosaurs to like thrash on each other in the end of the movie. And it's like, do we though? Do we need that? Do we need to spend, like, multiple plot points leading up to the end to set up the beef between the T-Rex and the Gigantosaurus?
Although, when the T-Rex and that one,
Therizinosaurus, the blind parrot with the long nails.
Yeah, when they kill the Gigantosaurus and they roar in the sky, it really is that scene in Step Brothers when they go, did we just become best friends?
It is actually genuinely funny because it sets up that there's going to be this big three-way fight, and T-Rex just shoves the Gigantosaurus onto this other dinosaur's long-ass nails, and it immediately dies, and they both just have this reaction of like, oh, well, that was a lot easier than I thought.
And then they just roar into the sky.
Should we roar? Should we have a good roar?
We gotta roar. We're best friends now.
You're in this now, Therizinosaurus.
You're with this. You're in this with me.
Oh, yeah. It's just like there is every... Like you said, this one feels... And I feel like that's not a coincidence, what with Chaos Theory happening at the same time. I feel like this is a movie that is trying to... service a lot of ideas, and it's also trying to service a lot of non-dinosaur ideas that, you know, make sense in this world. This is a world all about genetic engineering,
right?
You know, it's like a world where, you know, Maisie may be the key to solving the deadly locusts or something.
The genetically modified locusts.
Because the Mr. DNA theories of genetic engineering from the first movie hold true here, where you can use like VR and just like plug things in like a puzzle.
Yeah, just DNA works like a computer virus. I mean, I'm not a scientist. Maybe it does. I don't know.
You swap out your RNA strands like a new carburetor.
Yeah, I mean, I think knowing that it connects to the animated series, I think it makes a little bit more sense in that, oh yeah, they're trying to build out the world of the franchise. I mean, in a lot of ways, this sort of feels like a part three that it's like, well, is this anything? Is there any more gas left in this tank? Can we expand this franchise wider than you know, blow the doors off of it?
I don't know if it was a, is this anything, like we've got nothing left. It was more of a, where do we go from here?
Yeah.
Because it's like, we're coming to the end of one character run. Where do we go next? Is it, and I think, honestly, they did land on, we are gonna get farther from dinosaurs and we've genetically engineered like fucking Cloverfield monsters and stuff, because that's what it looks like we've got in Rebirth, which I think on one level, Rebirth at least looks like from the trailers and stuff, they've kind of simplified everything. It's down to like one location and one little group of characters, which is Jurassic Park / World movies should be like survival thrillers kind of at their heart. That's what they're, survival adventure movies. They're Skull Island trips, you know?
Yeah.
That's why Jurassic Park 3 is just kind of like, let's take out everything else and get down to brass tacks. And I think you need a little more than that, but Jurassic World Dominion is just too much. I think
there's so much going on. And I think, and at a certain point, like I said earlier, it starts to feel like Trevorrow is kind of making a point about legacy sequels and why they're like not a good idea. It's almost kind of what it comes down to.
Really want Ellie and Alan to be a couple at the end of Jurassic Park? Did you?
Like, I mean, I just figured they were a couple at the end of Jurassic Park. Up until Jurassic Park 3, they assumed they dated.
The only indication you get that they're really a couple is when Ian Malcolm asks Alan Grant, so Dr. Sattler, and he's like, yeah. And I feel like that could have just as easily been Alan Grant being like, I gotta get this guy away from Ellie. He will not stop hitting on her.
Yeah, it's, it's sort of like, oh, we need to service all these character bits from the first movie that were either resolved or, I mean, they gloss over Jurassic Park 3. They mention some of they mention at least Ellie's ex-husband.
Yeah, he has
kids.
Two kids and an ex, and an Isla Sorna exists. Also, right. I have to imagine through all of this, do you think the dinosaurs on Isla Sorna are just like, don't say anything. Everybody just stay real quiet. They're going to come.
Oh, it's a helicopter. Just
get down there. They're going to forget that we're here.
No one will know. No one will know.
Did you guys see what happened to Isla Nublar? It's fucked up. Bunch of dinosaurs swim over. It's like, you will not believe the day we've had.
This fucking sucks, man.
I'm not even supposed to be here today.
And then another one swims over from the mainland. It's like, guys, they've got cities. They're like cars running into me. You don't want to be there
it
either.
Sucks, dude.
It's so sad.
I ate something called Arby's and I was shitting for a week.
God, Also, I mean, like, as you were saying, the tone, at least especially in the early stretches, is such a bummer in this movie.
Yeah.
It is so sad and so mournful. It's just like, oh, okay.
Because it's like, yeah, it establishes that dinosaurs existing with humanity and modern, like, current era animals is, it's a rough go for everyone, but it's so miserable. Like, the tone, there's this scene early on where Maisie goes to this, like, logging, a logging company, because some big four-legged dumbass dinosaurs wandered in, and there's this sad moment, like, music playing, and all she's doing is telling them, like, light a flare, he'll follow the flare because he's got a brain the size of a peanut.
Yeah,
it's like, I don't know, like, you yeah, it is objectively what's happening is bad and what's happening is dangerous and people are getting killed, but that's been the case with all these movies. You have to, like, where's your sense of wonder, where's your sense of awe, where's your fucking John Williams music?
Right, I mean, and it teases that theme for so long.
It's so weird. This one's so weird because on one level it's desperately trying to have, like, the nostalgia factor, but at the same time it really doesn't want to be that. It's having a real identity crisis, because, like, the score, it's Michael Giacchino, who's awesome. Michael Giacchino has some amazing scores under his belt, but this one, not only does it not, apart from, like, Alan Grant turns around and it goes like for a moment, but it doesn't have any Jurassic Park chords from it, but it's also not, doesn't seem to have an identity of its own compared to, like, when he did the Star Trek, the J.J. Abrams Star Trek theme, which, you know, hints at the original, but definitely, like, that score made that movie work. You know, it gave it an identity.
Yeah, I mean, and this one, it just, I mean, again, it teases that theme out throughout the movie and then eventually, like, lays it on really thick near the end. But, yeah, it you're right. It's sort of, it's like trying to pander to nostalgia, but trying not to, and between the sort of bifurcated plot lines, it can't balance it. There's, like, it's just, there's just too much.
Yeah.
And the tone is just sort of also all over the place between being sort of, like, fun roller coastery and, like, oh, it's then mournful sadness that the dinosaurs are in human times. And you're like, I can't sort of square any of this.
The score lacks the whimsy of a John Williams. Like, the Jurassic Park score is, like, kind of, it's like a blend of Star Wars, E.T., and Jaws, like, at different points. If you listen to, like, all the way through, it's got a little bit of all of that. And this one just, it kind of lacks an identity beyond, like, generic modern blockbuster adventure sounding music, which is a shame, because I think his score for the first one is a good, like, kind of adaptation of John Williams. But his score for the second two just doesn't resonate in a way that I remember in Fallen Kingdom, the credits kick in and it's suddenly the, like, dun 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 dun, and it doesn't fit with the tone of the movie at all.
I mean, but I can understand why you would want to go stay away from it. I mean, like, as you said in our Superman episode, I think it's like, sometimes, you know, the John Williams score is doing all your heavy lifting for you, you know, and so it's like you kind of don't want the baggage. But
what I'm saying is, this doesn't have enough of an identity of its own.
Right. No, I know.
It doesn't go, it either needs to get closer or get farther away. That's the whole movie, maybe. Yeah. Like, you can tell it wants to be its own thing. Fallen Kingdom fully becomes its own thing at some point, and I think it works. Like, I'm fine with individual movies in a franchise having different, like, genre tones. Like, I'm all for a horror Jurassic Park movie. Like, the original's got horror elements. Jaws has horror elements. Like, killer animals can do that. It's totally valid. I just think, it's not a trilogy that feels like it was particularly planned out in advance.
No, not at all. No.
And, you know, and B, it just, this one is trying to do so much, and therefore every element feels like it's falling short a little bit.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It just kind of, I think I have in my notes that it's like, it feels like it trundles. Like, the movie just kind of, like, just trundles along and can't kind of, like, get a full head of steam going. You know?
It's ironic I'm comparing it to this, and it's not as bad as this, but it feels a little bit like Rise of Skywalker, where it just is like, where is this going? what's the outcome? Like, yeah, we want to get Maisie back. We want to get, I acknowledge that you should, you know, you just want your kids back. But
right. Yeah, I think that it actually is a good comparison because it does have that sort of video gamey, like, quest plot where it's sort of like they have to go to one place to get the thing, to get another thing, to go to another place, you know? And it's just,
yeah,
like,
I will say I think this is a more successful movie than that.
I agree.
But also, let's not go there. That's a whole different franchise. It's a whole different kettle of fish.
We've already discussed Star Wars, but I do think it has a similar problem in that it can't quite sort of nail down the exact story it wants to tell. And I mean, who knows sort of where that problem comes from, whether that's like that Universal wanted more franchise, you know, stuff to like plug into it, whether or not that was, you know, the filmmakers were a little, you know, distracted. I don't know.
No, I think it is just that they focused on a storyline that unfortunately left the dinosaurs kind of superfluous. But you still have to put dinosaurs in your movie because it's fucking Jurassic World, you know? It's like, if you want to get away from them, fine, but this franchise is pretty famously about dinosaurs. If you're going to keep using that logo, you have to have them be a big part of the movie.
And you know, when I first remember reading about the movie when it came out, because I didn't see it in theaters, and I remember reading it's about locusts, you're like, what? And then I thought, okay, well, it's going to be the main characters dealing with these locusts while dinosaurs are trying to eat them. And it's not even that.
No. It's these characters running from place to place. Along the way, they might encounter a dinosaur, and then they have to stop and everyone that's new to the scene has to introduce themselves to each other. Owen Grady and Alan Grant introduce themselves to so many different people in this movie.
It's so weird. It's so weird. And then, like, Ian Malcolm just becomes a quip machine
by
the end of the movie. Every line is just a quip.
I fucking love it. I love Sam Neill. I love Laura Dern. I love Jeff Goldblum, and they are always they're never not good, but it's like either they didn't give him any lines and they just said, Jeff, do whatever you want, or it was like, you know, we need a quippy guy who's our, like, I don't know, who's our Drax. He's kind of in the Drax role because he's kind of like, there's moments like when he's got to do the code on the gate, he suddenly becomes like the dumb guy in the group,
right.
And I'm like, what is that?
Like, you're a mathematician, dude.
It's also like, do you not know what the characterization of Ian Malcolm is? It's very easy. He's Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, I mean, like, his character here and his character in Independence Day Resurgence feel very similar in the way that they, like, rewrote them as, like, action movie guys.
If you go back and watch The Lost World, what a completely different person Ian Malcolm is in that movie. Where he's just like it's like they basically like had to dial back Jeff Goldblum as much as they could,
right? I don't know, it's a weird movie and
some gorgeous stuff in it though, the effects are all really good. I'd say this is like the dinosaur effects are great. They still do some practicals, but there's like, it's not like it's kind of damning it with faint praise, but there's just some shots, especially that final montage, that are just gorgeous stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, everything looks great. I mean, and even the, you know, the scene we were talking about with the Brachiosaurus walking through the construction site, like, that looks great, and the snow is falling down, and it looks really cool.
Like, not a bad looking movie.
No,
it's got, they put a lot of TLC into it, and the set pieces are fun. I find like some of the action hero stuff completely ridiculous, like coming from Claire or, you know, Alan Grant or someone like this who's not, and like, they're just not action people.
Well, and the way that the action scenes are built, they feel more like a Fast and the Furious movie and less sort of like a Jurassic
or
Park
a James
movie.
Like a Daniel Craig James Bond movie. Like, Daniel Craig would be like on a motorcycle running through Malta. He just wouldn't be dealing with dinosaurs.
Right, exactly. So it just, they feel like, it's like, how can we top ourselves? And I think, again, what sort of makes that first movie magical is that it, you know, it takes sort of the B movie thrills and mixes them with this total sense of like awe and wonder, and it's just a hard thing to replicate.
You can never recapture the surprise of that first movie. There's
few
movies out there where there's like some movies in our lifetime where they've been trying desperately to regain the magic of how people reacted to the first one and when it first came out, and it's really hard to do. Like The Matrix has been chasing that high for a long time, and you know, like Jurassic Park, and I don't know, there's other examples. It's like Star Wars to a lesser extent, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's sort of where we usually come down with sort of threequels, is it's like, oh yeah, they're really just trying to get the magic back. And I think, to this movie's credit, it is trying to tell a bigger story with a bigger scope than the other movies. It's just too big. I think the scope is too big. And
I actually think this would have worked better as a middle movie to set up something more expansive. If you'd started the series, obviously they're going to start with your Force Awakens, your soft reboot, park's open, let's do park going to shit again. But what if you'd started with Fallen Kingdom? Isla Sorna's volcano is about to go off, and we have to figure out what to do with these dinosaurs that we've been sort of just maintaining for all these years. And that's, then you go from there.
Right.
And you start with Evil Corporation in a house, then Evil Corporation in a big weird Dolomite Mountains preserve, and then it's at the end, it's they're all out. The dinosaurs are loose in the world, and that's what your third movie would be.
Right.
I don't know. They didn't call me, you know?
No, I think you're right, though. I think it does make more sense as sort of the end of a third movie, because then of having the dinosaurs all loose, because then it does sort of be like, okay, now the world is wide open and you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, you can tell any story you want.
Whatever kind of story you want now. I mean, and that's kind of what they end up doing here, but yeah.
I love the end of this movie, though, when they go back to their cabin and they bring Beta, a little baby raptor, back to Blue. Blue just is back and looks at them, just like, you have no idea what I've been up to. I've killed so many people. I killed a whole fucking day camp of kids. I've just gone crazy while you were gone. I really shouldn't be allowed to just run around out here. You won't believe what I've done.
I thought they were going to bring Blue with them at a certain point, but they just, you know, Blue just kind of gets forgotten.
Oh, Blue with like a little like doggy hiking backpack on. You know, I mean, you know, they thought about it. They thought about it for a minute, because they were like, we got to have a raptor chase in there, so we're going to introduce these like other raptors, and they're bad raptors. These are bad boy raptors.
They follow, I think, the laser pointer.
We talked about this. The laser pointer thing came back from Fallen Kingdom. It's like, you put a laser pointer on you, and this dinosaur just cannot. It's like, this dinosaur is just like an angry cat, you know?
It's going right for you. I wish they would have given one of the raptors a mohawk, though, like in Jurassic Park 3. Just Stripe and Gremlins. Just,
yeah. You know, you'd think that they would. No, they don't have enough recurring villain dinosaurs. Otherwise, you know, there'd be one with like a scar on it by now.
Oh yeah,
or like a burned face, like the shark in Jaws 2.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Well, we talked about this with Jurassic Park 3. You brought up, it's the problem is when they start making the dinosaurs into characters. Is
right.
Like, some of the best stuff in this movie is the more they treat them like animals, the better it works. Like, I would take an entire movie of that's like dialogue free of just dinosaurs in prehistoric times, like in the opening of the extended version. That would be incredible. Like, remember when Disney did Dinosaur and all the trailers had no dialogue, and then the movie came out and they're all just got kooky, silly voices?
Sam, this is going to be a tangent. Do you know where that movie came from? Do you know, like, how that movie was developed initially?
There's the ride at Animal
but
Kingdom.
You know how there's the random dinosaur in that commercial in RoboCop?
Yes. Yeah, for the 6000 SUX. Yeah.
So I might be sort of, I'm half remembering this, but.
No, go.
Verhoeven and, what's his name, the stop-motion guy from RoboCop, were developing a dinosaur movie about dinosaurs, a stop-motion movie for Disney, and that eventually became Dinosaur, the animated movie, but Verhoeven and
was it Tippett?
Tippett, yeah. And Verhoeven and Tippett had long since left, but that's where that came from. That's why there's a random dinosaur in RoboCop. It's test footage.
It's amazing. Oh, RoboCop, it all ties back to RoboCop.
Everything ties back to RoboCop.
But yeah, I remember Dinosaur, they really had, they it's not I don't remember it being a bad movie, but it's a very forgettable movie. It's kind of just like it's The Land Before Time, but with more like
realistic dinosaurs,
wisecracking monkeys. You know, the ride is intense. It was an intense ride. They just closed it down, so rest in peace, Dinosaur the Ride. But it's like that's the thing. Since Jurassic Park, everyone that's tried to do dinosaurs is going to get measured up against Jurassic Park. And it's all, even in its own franchise, it's always going to feel like it's missing something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, it's just that lightning in a bottle of that one shot with the herd of dinosaurs. And then Alan Grant saying they do travel in herds. Yeah. It's that one sequence that you just cannot recapture. You just can't, you know.
I mean, you could look at anything with that John Williams music, and it would seem, true. Yeah. You know, I could be looking at, like, oh, the dumpster behind my building's been emptied out. I can take the cardboard downstairs, you know? Dun, 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 dun. Well, that we're gonna see what happens next. I'm always going to come back to this franchise. I'm going to see Rebirth. I'm genuinely curious. I'm always down for more dinosaur madness. And it's, you know, every time they're going to try and gear shift the franchise in some direction. And I'm with everything, I'm open-minded. I want to see where they go. I want it to be good. I want everything to be good.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, of course, we've been ragging on this movie, but it's like everyone working on it is working at the top of their game.
No, and its reach exceeds its grasp. I'm never going to fault a movie for having too much, trying to do too much, you know?
Exactly.
Some movies are elegant in their simplicity. Some movies are a big swing. And I think, you know, you won't get Jurassic Park without taking big swings. Like, that's right. The long and short of it. You know, you never know what you might stumble upon. And I've had worse times on this podcast alone than Jurassic World Dominion, for sure. This was a breeze. You know?
It's just long. But it's other long, than that,
but everything's long. Everything's so long.
Everything has to be long.
I think what I need, I need like 105 minutes. Like 92, Jurassic World 3, I'm like, all right, 92 minutes. It's too short. I need a little more than that. I need an hour and 40 at least.
Yeah. Yeah, 105 minutes is like a perfect sweet spot,
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I'm not sure where we're going next, but July has a couple of big superheroes, so maybe we'll do some superhero movies next. We can figure out what that is as we go, because we've done a lot of superhero threequels, most of them pretty bad, but there are a couple of good ones in there, and we'll try to dig them up and talk them out with you all.
I think that sounds fun. Do you want me to suggest one now? What do you want me to do here?
Sure, because honestly, I can't remember any of them, so knock yourself out.
Well, so I was thinking, we did a Shane Black movie that had lots of problems. Shane Black has another threequel that is actually quite good, and I know you have a fondness for it. I was thinking we'd do Iron Man 3.
We've actually done a couple of Shane Black movies with some problems. He stars in RoboCop 3.
Oh, that's right.
He's involved with Lethal Weapon 3.
That's right. Okay.
And we did The Predator.
The Predator, yeah. Yes.
No, we love Shane Black, and it is time. You're right. Let's talk Iron Man 3. It's a divisive installment in the MCU. It's one of the true legit threequels, what with the number 3 in the title. And it's a movie I really like. I really like this movie a lot. I think there's a lot of good shit going on in Iron Man 3, and let's get into this.
It's Fantastic Four coming, MCU's on everybody's brain. Let's do Iron Man 3.
There's no third Fantastic Four yet to talk about, so we will find the next best mustachioed super genius whose best friend is a pilot. And
there's a guy who's basically made of fire and flame.
Good. So far, so good.
Somebody kind of stretches and melts at one point in Iron Man 3, right? So,
His girlfriend is a blonde. Yeah. Sometimes a blonde.
Sometimes a redhead.
Yeah. No.
It depends.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good enough. I'll take it. It's close enough for me. All right. Well, then next time we will be back. We will hope you all have a good 4th of July, good summer so far, and we will see you next time for Iron Man 3. And please don't forget, Will remembers this every time. I remember this time. Like, subscribe. You can follow us on Instagram at @podcastpart3. And
rate and review.
Rate and review. Thank you very much, Will. But only if you're going to say nice things.
Yeah, don't say anything mean.
If you're going to mean shit post us, you know.
Just email us.
Just insult people to their face, all right? Like a man. Well, until then, Will, always a delight. Always fun. Thank you for this was an adventure 65 million years in the making, and it felt like it.
Oh, one last thing. Dinosaurs with feathers. They look stupid, right? I'm sure they really did have feathers, but they look kind of dumb on screen. I think
if they go full bird like that one on the ice, I'm okay with it. If it's just a big angry turkey, like, I'm fine with that. But yeah, I know that they all had feathers. I know they were all weird big chickens, but I don't need that. It's fine. I appreciate the fan service, but I like my T-Rex. I like my T-Rex shorn.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's again, probably scientifically inaccurate, but they look better as big lizards. They just look better.
They look like the Jurassic Park dinosaurs. They don't have to look like the real ones. They just have to look like the Jurassic Park dinosaurs.
And it's not like the scientists making these guys knew that they would have feathers anyway. They would design them to be like the dinosaurs that they... Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm going on a rant. I don't know.
It's okay. It's okay, honey. Shh. Shh. They can't get you. They're not real.
They're very real.
Okay.
All right. Sorry.
I'm sorry you all had to see that, folks. But we'll be back next time for the featherless Tony Stark in Iron Man 3. And until then, we will see you later. Will, go get some sleep.
Bye.
Bye.